Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, December 30th, 2007, and this is show number 128. Well, before I get too far into the show, I wanted to play this little conversation with Victor Cahiao of the Typical Mac User podcast, hosted at typicalmacuser.com. Well, I've got Victor Cahiao from the Typical Mac User podcast on the phone here. How are you doing, Victor?
Hey, Allison. I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, Victor's had his worst nightmare come true. My husband, Steve, bought me a mixer and a new microphone. Now, I refer to this as Victor's fault because he gave me advice on what I should ask for. So that meant he had to figure out how to teach me how to use it.
Yeah, it's like selling a computer to your family member. You'll forever be tech support.
Yeah, luckily we've actually gotten there fairly quickly, I think.
You've done a great job, and hopefully it's easy. It's easy as pie, isn't it?
Oh, it was a piece of cake. So let me tell you what this thing is. It's a Mackie DFX6, and I told Victor I wanted a weeny little beginner kind of mixer. And when I opened this box, I screamed because it was so scary. There are sliders, dials, knobs, lights, blinkies, things to plug in. I didn't know what anything was. But Victor told me not to be scared.
That's right. It's just one of everything. It's just duplicated three or four times for every channel. And that's how I tell people to think about boards. It's just there's one channel. And then if you learn one channel, then you know them all. And if you learn the master output, then you know how the rest works. So it's just a little bit at a time, like anything else.
I think some of it's terminology, too. One thing I found in technology is that a lot of times if you just know the vocabulary, you can get a long ways.
Yeah, and in this case, usually I'm one of those tech people that throws away the manual. But I told you, in the case of Mackie, they do a great job of writing manuals. They've been doing it for a long time, and they're very comprehensive. And I think you found that to be true, right?
Yeah. Without the terminology, though, it's still kind of tough. Like, I didn't know which knobs they were talking about and that sort of thing. But they have some good diagrams, little numbers next to it and everything. Work pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, these mixers are still overkill for what we do, really. If I could take one of these boards, and I have one that's very similar to yours, and just kind of take the technology, because what they're known for is they have very good preamps for their microphones. And that's what you need to have good sound. So that's why you buy a Mackie. It's not because how many knobs it has, how many lights. But once you have that great preamp, if I could just take a couple of channels and then the master and shrink this thing down, that's what I would do. But they haven't figured that out yet, that you get it like if you were a band. So now you can have five people in your studio at one time or something.
So now I need to hire a band.
Now you need to hire a band or buy them beer or whatever.
Really? Oh, I should mention the microphone is a Heil PR20. Now you have the PR30, is that correct?
I have the PR40.
PR40, okay.
Right. But the 20 is a great little mic. It's a $150 microphone. It can be used handheld. The beautiful thing about that microphone, Allison, is that you will be able to use that for any remote recording that you do in the field with your H2 plugged into that, as well as in the studio, and it will give you this quality of sound anywhere you go. It's a great mic.
So you jumped ahead a little bit. We should mention that my really generous husband also got me the H2 sound recorder, which is a little handheld recording device. And I didn't realize I can plug the Heil into that. That's fantastic.
Yep, you just buy yourself a little cord, which I believe the H2 is a quarter inch. So you go from your XLR to quarter inch and set it to mono. And you're good to go. You're going to have this quality of recording right directly into your recorder. As a matter of fact, you could bypass the board altogether if you ever had to in a pinch. I've done that in a living room bench, sitting on my seat podcast.
Wow. That what's comical, I started to giggle as you said that, because when I got this setup, I didn't have an XLR cable. So I went to the store to Sam Ash and picked up an XLR cable. And then he came back and talked to you and realized that I needed an eighth inch stereo or eighth inch mono to quarter inch stereo cable. So I went over to Sam Ash and I bought that. And then we realized that I couldn't plug my headphones into the board unless I had an eighth inch to quarter inch adapter. So I went back over to buy that. Now I got to go back over and buy, for the fourth trip now, XLR to quarter inch.
Yep, I think that's what it is. Or you might just be able to get an adapter for the cable that you got that will work as well. But yeah, it's one of those things that when you become an audio geek, you have to have at least one or two drawers full of cords that you never need until you need them. And then you're really thankful that you have that drawer full of cords.
So this is kind of like the computer geeks where we have all of our, you know, weird DVI cables and Ethernet cables and all that stuff and extra mice. Now I'm going to have a whole drawer full of audio stuff.
Yeah, welcome to my world. That's
awesome.
Right.
Awesome. This is great. And the people making the money are actually the cable guys, right?
Yeah, you know, you got that right. But you found some good resources from that, man. You turned me onto that site to get some great deals on cables. And maybe you'll find one for audio too.
But you know,
it's really incredible how much better your sound is, Allison. I mean, right away when we were tweaking things, it was like, all right, now it's on, you know, and it really makes a huge difference.
Oh, cool. I can't wait to go back and listen to it. I know my audience is probably just about weary enough of all the audio problems I've had with Skype. That's for sure.
Well, we're still using Skype, and that's still the lowest common denominator. But I think having good audio gear just to do your own part of the show like you do, you'll see that it makes a huge difference just to how you feel about it, because it's like one less thing you have to worry about.
Yeah, this is definitely a lot less work than mucking around with all the other stuff I was doing before in software.
Right, right. And the beauty is that you can have all the options. As I was telling you in our call here, you can even not ever use your computer to record audio again and simply go out of your board into your H2 and do all your recording externally, then simply take that data through a card reader, and then bring it into GarageBand and port it in, and you're good to go as far as editing.
That's crazy. Crazy.
Yep, it's a lot of fun.
Well, I sure did get a lot of fun toys. So thank you, Steve, if you're listening. And thank you, Victor, for all your help and patience with my complete and utter lack of knowledge on this topic.
No, it always reminds me of what I need to remember, because you do this stuff and you forget the basics sometimes, and that's the most important thing.
Right, right. All right, Victor, we'll have a safe New Year's, and we'll probably talk to you again next year.
Cool. I'm glad I got back on the mic before the new year. I thought I'd forgotten to know how to use it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Elson.
Well, with any luck, you can tell a difference in the sound quality of my Skype recordings and of my voice by myself here on the podcast. I sure hope so. I put a link in the show notes to the mixer that I got and the microphone that I got, and also a PDF file showing the mixer setup with all the cables and wires and how my sound settings are and everything. I'll probably put that over in the tutorial sections later, but I want to make sure I've really got it set up the way I want to advertise. Well, Martin and Chris both wrote in to explain to me how to get rid of the annoying printer feature, let's call it, in Leopard that Bart and I were talking about in our last chit-chat across the pond. What drives us crazy in Leopard is that once you print, it leaves a live icon kind of floating in your open applications for the printer that you were printing to. It just sits there forever. Anyway, Chris posted a Chris screenshot to show how to kill it. When it's been left open, it sits in your dock. You can right-click on it and select Auto Quit. I know Bart's going to be thrilled to hear about that when he gets back from vacation. I wonder why they put such an annoying feature in the first place. What good could it be? I don't know, maybe if you've got a lot of stuff to print, it would save you some time on the next print job. Yeah, I think it's kind of silly. But this is a quick little point here. We went to Fresno for a few days over Christmas, which is about a four-hour drive north from Los Angeles. I asked my son whether he wanted to bring our spare iBook for entertainment on the road and playing around at our relative's house. And he said to me, "What can the iBook do that the iPhone can't?" How's that for an interesting perspective? I should mention he got an iPhone for his birthday, and he ended up playing with it all the way up and back. He was on wireless using Edge, and he was able to surf the internet. He went on Meebo.com in order to use chat to his girlfriend. And he watched some YouTube videos. He had a great time. In fact, using his wireless Edge came in handy because the router barfed on us at our relative's house, so we weren't able to get on our Macs, but we could get on our iPhones. Thought that was kind of an interesting perspective, that he'd rather have his iPhone there than an iBook. Well, I think since we're going into the new year, it's time for a new homework assignment, don't you think? This one's going to be fun. I was just looking at my Google Analytics data for the last month, and for some reason, in the last month, we have had no listeners from the entire state of Montana. Okay, perhaps the fact that there are a total of, 12 people living in Montana might be a contributor. But how come nobody from Vermont has listened to the podcast or visited podfeet.com either? What's with Montana and Vermont this month? They've been there before, but for some reason they're not there. It's inexplicable. Well, this week's homework is for you to think about your friends and family, and through the 6 degrees of freedom, I want you to find someone in Vermont and maybe even Montana and get them to check out the podcast. I have complete faith in you that you can get this done. You can pull it off. Let me know if you find someone and we'll give them a shout out. Wouldn't that be fun? There was an interesting topic on one of the discussion boards I read. Someone asked for the Mac OS X equivalent programs for things like Microsoft Paint. Well, they wanted to be able to help switchers adjust, and they were looking for a list of good applications like Microsoft Paint substitutes that would make Windows users more comfortable. From that initial question, it pretty much stayed on the path of Paint-type programs while the guy was actually looking for more than just Paint. But anyway, I was intrigued, so I decided to check out a couple of the ideas people suggested. Charlie was the big contributor, as always, and he suggested Paintbrush from paintbrush.sourceforge.net. The website says that Paintbrush was developed specifically to replace Microsoft Paint and the now-defunct Mac Paint. Basic functionality is all they were going for, so I'm not expecting a wow program here. Paintbrush saves to most major image formats, including, you know, BMP, PNG, JPEG, and GIF. It's open source. You can tell that by the fact that it's from SourceForge, and of course, that means it's free. Paintbrush opens with a choice of preset sizes, like 640 by 480 or 800 by 600 on up. And it also allows you to start with a custom canvas size if you'd rather do that. Paintbrush comes with the usual suspects of tools, lines, ovals, rectangles, text, and a paint bucket. The squiggly line tool is kind of interesting, though. It wasn't normal. When you first draw with it, it makes a straight line. That really confused me because it showed it as a squiggly line and I didn't want a straight line. But when I tried to draw a second line, it turned out I was still in the process of working on the first line. The second place you click pulls the straight line into an arc towards your cursor. If you click it a third time, it pulls it again to make a more complex arc. Click again and it starts a new line. It's kind of an interesting way to make curvy lines. I've never seen anything like that, but it seems to work okay. Paintbrush supports the usual font tool and color crayons that you're used to in most applications, along with a nice bomb that you can click if you want to erase your whole drawing. I seem to think I remember that from back in the old Mac Paint days. Haven't seen that in a long time. Always fun to blow up your drawings. Well, Paintbrush also allows you to use a grid for drawing, but the one thing I did want was a tool that would allow me to move things once I'd created them. But I think it converts everything to bits right away, so they're not really objects you could move around. I also tested Paintbrush to see if it could open a JPEG, and that worked fine, but I couldn't do much with it. I thought maybe I'd be able to shrink the resolution or something like that. The only reason I tried doing that was I could have sworn Microsoft Paint could do that, but maybe I'm misremembering. You know how I am. Well, Paintbrush appears to do just what it says it will do. Gives you a free substitute to Microsoft Paint or Mac Paint if you miss that functionality from Windows. Well, Charlie also suggested a program that's a little more advanced. It's called TuxPaint from tuxpaint.org. It's also free, and it's really targeted towards kids from 3 to 12 years old. It's supposed to have an easy-to-use interface, fun sound effects, and an encouraging cartoon mascot. Wow, that sounds like an application even I could figure out. Well, TuxPaint and the associated stamps download from SourceForge, as any good open-source program should, and it's not available for just the Mac, but also for Linux, Windows, and get this, even the XO laptop, the one laptop per child. I'll have to try installing that on the XO. That'll be a challenge for me because it's in Linux, and they started out with that wget stuff, but I think I'm up to the challenge. If not, I know a few people out there who are willing to help me. Well, TuxPaint has to fish around for fonts when it first launches, but Tux, the enjoyable mascot penguin, assures us that he'd rather be fishing for fish than fonts, so he'll get it done as quickly as possible. Sure enough, the second time I launched it, it didn't have to do any fishing around. When TuxPaint does open, it has a row of colors across the bottom, brushes on the right, and then tools on the left. The tools on the left include things like text, lines, shapes, more stamps, the eraser, and all the usual suspects. I like the magic tool best. It switches between all kinds of crazy tools I've never seen before, like bricks, blurring, calligraphy, cartoon balloons, a whole host of things that have nothing to do with each other. Everything you touch has a unique sound to it. Little lines in red, blue, yellow, whatever, have a different sound than thick lines. They sound different. That's kind of fun. bricks sound different than the eraser. So, you know, this would just be great fun for kids. Everything you're clicking on, it's making noises and drawing and all kinds of crazy stuff. I'm telling you, I'm going to put this machine on every machine in the house for entertainment value alone. I then noticed that you can download additional stamps. So I raced over to SourceForge and I downloaded those too. I thought this would be more like things like rectangles and stars and stuff, but suddenly I had beautiful birds like mallard ducks and cranes, really detailed paintings. I have a large assortment of apples and other fruits now. I have hats, binoculars, coffee pots, toilets, all kinds of stuff done in these beautiful graphics. It's definitely worth the second download to get these fun stamps. TuxPaint is a cool little program and will keep you, your young friends, entertained for hours. Well, you've heard me talk about Honda Bob before, my mechanic of 29 years, and how great his website is as a resource for great information on cars. He takes the complexity of automobiles and he breaks them down into easy-to-understand pieces so you can get just enough information to have an intelligent conversation with your mechanic. That is, if you're unlucky enough to not live in Honda Bob's service area. Remember when my husband discharged his battery and left me with his car to go out of town? Trust me, he'll never forget that incident. Anyway, Honda Bob's website is where I went automatically to double-check how to jumpstart a car. Well, Honda Bob is never satisfied with anything he's done, and he's always looking for improvements, so he's doing some redesign on his website to make it easier to find stuff. He's now made his table of contents look like the owner's manual now, so it's pretty cool. Go over and check it out at hdabob.com. And if you are lucky enough to live in the LA or Orange County areas, and you would like outstanding and convenient in-home care for your Honda or Acura, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or heck, send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, one of the most important things to keep in mind as you come off your holiday time is that you have to be very, very careful when you get back to work. You've been used to sleeping in, eating four times before lunch, and staying up late doing whatever you want. If you start up at work too quickly, though, you can pull a muscle. You need to take it easy, move slowly into it. I'm here to help you with that process. I want you to go to albinoblacksheep.com and play the block game Bloxors. That's Bloxorz. This is a simple game where you flip a block around on a field of tiles with the intent of dropping that block down through a hole. If you get it through the hole, you get to go on to the next level. Sounds very simple. Yeah, right. I'm only about halfway through, so you're going to waste hours and hours and hours of your life this way. Please let your boss know that it's my fault. In case you're an idiot savant and you manage to solve Bloxors in just a couple of days, and you're worried you might accidentally start being productive too quickly, here's another great time waster. Have you ever wondered about your neighborhood area? People that live around you, are they college educated? What races are represented in your area? How many of these people are married? How much money do they make? Maybe you're not curious about these things, but if you are, and you live in the U.S., check out ZipSkinny at zipskinny.com. All you do is put in a zip code and instantly you have graphs on the educational levels, marital status, income, racial diversity, age, and occupations of all of your neighbors. ZipSkinny also shows you this in graph form comparing your zip code to the entire state and then to the entire United States. It even shows you those same statistics in comparison to neighborhoods near yours. Beyond idle curiosity, this site would actually be pretty useful when you're looking for a new home. For example, they show you information on the schools in the zip codes you've chosen. It shows the number of teachers, students, obviously student-to-teacher ratio as a result, racial demographics, and special programs available at those schools. If you're really fascinated by what information ZipSkinny can give you, you can create your own ZipSkinny widget for your website, including customizing the colors, layout, and what information you want to include. I think ZipSkinny is fascinating, and when you're done playing with it, it's probably safe for you to get back to work. Well, now that we've decided to apply ourselves at work again, let's do a work-related tip. If you use a Mac, but sometimes you have to use Windows, you have several choices now. You have Bootcamp, but you have to buy Windows and you have to reboot in order to get to Bootcamp. You could use Parallels or VMware's Fusion to create a virtual machine running Windows on your Mac, but then you'd have to buy Windows and the VM software. Plus, it takes a fair length of time for Windows to pop up under either of those virtual machines. There's a third option available to you if you happen to be on a network with Windows XP Professional running on other machines, and if you're actually allowed to log into one of them. Note that this tip does not work with XP Home, only with XP Pro. This option is free and requires no resources in terms of disk space or processing power in your Mac. The software is called Remote Desktop Connection, and it's actually available from Microsoft of all places. The current version is 2.0 Beta 2, and I've been testing it recently. It's way faster and easier to use than it is to launch Parallels, even though I've got that right here on my machine. This new version of RDC allows you to store connections that you want to make to multiple machines. So let's say you have different servers you'd like to manage and you want to be able to hop between them quite easily, you can do that with RDC. You obviously need to log in to the remote XP Pro machine, and that XP Pro machine must be set up to allow remote connections. To create a new connection in RDC, you simply click the plus button on the bottom left-hand side of the screen. Enter a name for the connection, you know, something memorable to you. Then you enter the hostname or IP address of the XP Pro machine. You may have to put in the fully qualified name if you're using the hostname. Next, you enter your username, and if you want to, you can also enter your password. My passwords change every 30 days, so whenever I'm given that option, I leave that field blank because I don't want to get confused when it won't connect later because I've gotten a new password and I'm not noticing that. Next, enter the domain in which the XP machine exists, and finally, you select the screen resolution for the window that will open with your XP session, because it's just going to be this floating window of Windows sitting on your desktop. You can set the resolution to anything you want. Doesn't have to be any kind of standard aspect ratio, but I recommend you don't make it bigger than your screen resolution, or you're going to have to use the scroll bars to move around on the XP machine. You might be able to see the top of the screen, but not be able to get to the start bar, for example. That's all the configuration you do. You hit connect, and in just seconds, I mean like 4 seconds, it launches your XP session up on the other machine. I've started using this pretty regularly, and it's a real joy to use. Well, except for the part where you're actually running a Windows machine in the endgame. You may have heard your Windows buddies use the term RDP instead of RDC. RDP is the Windows to Windows version of virtually the same thing, and it stands for Remote Desktop Protocol. The guys I work with use it all the time. If they're in a conference room, they can just use RDP and go into their machine in their office so they can use the tools they need that they have there and access the files they need. Anyway, I hope this little tip to use RDC for free from Microsoft makes your Windows life a little bit easier. Well, I've had about a week or so to play with the one laptop per child or XO laptop, and I think I'm starting to get the hang of it. As I said last week, one problem was that it didn't support WPA encryption on a wireless network. People who've bought the OLPC are kind of in an interesting group of people. These are laptops that you can only get if you're of a giving mind. That is, if you're willing to donate a laptop to a child you'll never meet. And if you believe in this entire program. Again, anyone who's bought this is also probably a hardcore geek. So what do you get if you put generous geeks who believe in helping others together? A hacking wiki, of course. Lobster Sundew made a terrific comment on Steve and my YouTube video of the OLPC, explaining a bunch of things that we could do, including telling me that there's a hack on the OLPC wiki that shows how to get WPA to work. The wiki is at wiki.laptop.org, and it's got tons of great tips. Can't wait to get in there and read some more. Anyway, the hack to get WPA going is actually really easy. Basically, they give you a script to copy onto a thumb drive using your PC or Mac, and then you copy it from the thumb drive to the laptop. They do a great job of explaining exactly how to do that part because, I've mentioned a couple of times I'm not really comfortable in Linux, but they go through the steps just perfectly, so it's real easy to copy it. Once you get it on the OLPC, you simply run the script. And of course, they tell you how to run the script. It queries you for some information about the access point you want to connect to, and then you reboot, and you're on. Well, okay, it didn't actually work for me the first few times until I discovered the forums, where someone had said they succeeded when they simply changed the channel on the access point to channel one. I did that and boom, I was in. It was pretty cool. I just love that there's all these people out there figuring out how to make this dream even better than it was. From what I've read, this was actually the plan the OLPC folks had in the first place, that if they made it open with Linux and accessible, it'd be able to grow into more than they actually created for it. One thing I thought was a little bit odd, and maybe my Linux friends can chime in on this, Linux and Unix friends, in order to run the script or to copy the script, you have to switch user to root, only they never queries for a password. Isn't that a little bit odd? I'm able to open the terminal and not tell it the password to be root? I thought that was a little bit strange. Well, over the holidays, I asked my 11-year-old nephew to play with the OLPC and see what he could find in there. Sometimes you just gotta hand it to a kid to find things. Specifically, I wanted him to figure out if there are actually any games on it. He actually found only one game. It's essentially the old card game Concentration. You know, the one where you flip cards over and you try to remember where they were to make matches? Well, that's the only one he found. It was kind of interesting to me that there weren't more games in there, but I guess that's not the point. It's not really to play around, it's actually to learn stuff, right? The good news is that I read around a bit on the wiki and the forums, and it looks like people are writing games for the OLPC as we speak, even porting some older games over as well. One other exciting thing about the OLPC, Colin Devereaux of Vidler put our OLPC video as a spotlight video on Vidler this week. I thought that was kind of cool. Anyway, he made fun of us for not being able to figure out why it wouldn't turn on in the first place when we didn't actually have the battery in yet. He did enjoy that quite a bit. I wrote back to him and explained that self-deprecating humor is what makes my audience happy. You're used to me making fun of myself anyway. Well, check out his comments at blog.vidler.com/cdevereaux/OLPC-review. And of course, there's a link in the show notes. You don't have to remember all that. Well, stay tuned for more OLPC adventures as I learn more about this cool tool. Well, while many of my podcasting buddies were slacking on holiday, I managed to squeak out a show. Even it might be a little bit short, but hey, Bart was on vacation in some barren wasteland in Belgium with no internet access, so I think I did pretty good getting out as much of a show as I did. Anyway, let me know what you think of this new and improved sound by sending me emails at allison@podfeet.com. And have a really safe New Year's, and because I want to have you around in 2008, and come on by and listen to the show again. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.